Welcome to Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. I'm your host of today's festivities, Amelia Dalton. The year was 2014. The place, Mountain View, California. The goal? To start a modular revolution. To bring the power of smartphone communication to the people. Or at least the 6 billion people who don't already have one. Yep, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about Google's Project Aura. Now, back in April of last year, I had the distinct pleasure of attending the first ever Project Aura Developers Conference. I even got to interview Aura himself. Yeah, the project just happens to be named after one of the engineers at NK Labs. I didn't actually interview a smartphone. Okay. Anyway, there has been some late-breaking and ever-so-exciting news in the world of Project Aura that I just had to share. Let's back up a second. Just in case you didn't see my fish frying or on-the-scene coverage of Project Aura back in April of last year, Project Aura is to be the world's first 3D-printed, open-source, modular smartphone. You want a new camera for your smartphone? No problem. Just make one. You want to add some medical sensing capabilities? No problem. Here's the specs for their API. Sounds super cool, in theory. And that's all last year's conference was. Pretty much just theory, PowerPoint, and a couple cool prototypes to ooh and awe over. Well, folks, the rubber is now meeting the road. The electropermanent magnets are finding their matches, and I couldn't be happier. It was announced just this week that Google is taking Aura to the market. Okay, now don't get your credit cards out just yet. No, this will be a very limited release. Only, in Puerto Rico, it seems. Now I know. I thought the same thing when I read the headline, Limited Release in Puerto Rico. What the... Well, it does make sense. It seems that the Puerto Rican population is what they call mobile first, meaning that most... about 75%, actually, of their internet consumption happens on a mobile device. Interesting. And an important part. And even though Puerto Rico is not technically a state, it's still under FCC jurisdiction, meaning they can get the nuts and bolts figured out on how this new smartphone ecosystem is going to work in a smaller market, and I'm guessing here, without a bunch of extra state regulatory business. Google is also working with 11 different schools under their Advanced Technology and Projects group in Puerto Rico to work on building modules for Project Aura. So, speaking of modules, because really, that's what we're here for now, isn't it? Yeah, sure, I think it would be really cool to own one, but I don't think it would really replace my 5S, right? It may, but probably not. I'm not exactly the target market for ownership of the Aura, but I want to build one, don't you? How incredibly cool would it be to, say, your friends, while having a couple beers at the pub, that you built your own smartphone gadget? Yeah. So it seems that we're getting a little closer to that as well. It was also announced this week that eInfochips and Toshiba America Electronic Components Incorporated, or TAEC, will now be offering an Art OS 12 Google Aura development kit for the 1x2 module. All right, now we're talking. So, what's in this kit? Well, it features a micro SD and USB slots, enabling developers to store data and interface to external devices. Okay, it will also include a Toshiba T6WR6XBG, phew, general purpose bridge to support optional interfaces such as UART, I2C, I2S, SPI, and GPIO. Okay, this Google 1x2 module kit also includes high-speed interfaces for connection to application processor bridge, right? USB drivers, and a quick start documentation. And what's even cooler than the kit itself is that eInfochips is also offering its expertise on Google Aura modules with custom design and engineering services. Super cool. These services will include multimedia integration, platform porting, performance optimization, application development, and more. Now, folks, if you want even more information about this new Google Aura development kit, the newest developments for Google Project Aura's launch in Puerto Rico, or even, heck, if you want to watch my coverage of the first Project Aura DevCon, I've included a whole slew of links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com. Now, folks, let's take it down for a second and talk about some scary stuff. I know, way to be a downer, Amelia. Okay, let's talk about cloning. One of the scariest issues in the whole world of EE today is security. But what if your chip was unclonable? Sounds like some stuff that's created in some kind of dark government lab, isn't it? No, it's real. My guest today is Tim Marin from Microsemi, and we're talking about the world's first FPGAs that contain hardened, physically unclonable function technology. Yeah, take that, bad guys. Hi, Tim. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Amelia. How are you?
I'm pretty great. Thank you for asking. Well, Tim, I recently read that Microsemi has the world's first and only FPGAs to integrate physically unclonable function technology, or PUF technology, licensed from Intrinsic ID. So first, tell my audience, what exactly is this PUF technology?
PUF technology is pretty interesting as it relates to silicon devices. At a very high level, I would consider it to be a silicon fingerprint, where only the device knows. Just like your own fingerprint is unique to every human being, we now ship FPGAs that have a unique characteristic that is basically built into the FPGA through the manufacturing process, an ID that only the FPGA knows. Nobody else knows it except the FPGA.
That is super cool. Now, let's talk more about this. So why do you think it's important to implement PUF technology? What will it buy us as designers?
So PUF technology, since it is only known by the device, the ID, the number, it's, you know, essentially, bottom line, it's a numerical value, can be used as a key for cryptographic operations. And primarily, it's well-suited for generating a key as part of a private-public key pair for asymmetric cryptography. It makes the whole process of authenticating machines much, much easier because you don't have to have a human being inject the key into the device. That number becomes the key.
Now, this physically unclonable function has been hardened into your Smart Fusion 2 SoC FPGAs and Iglo 2 FPGAs. Why is it hardened IP rather than, say, another soft IP or a software-based solution?
Well, right off the bat, it becomes lower power, consumes less power because the area is smaller than in soft IP or software, so it's cheaper, it's less expensive. And some competing FPGA technologies, you actually can't implement a soft, an RTL-based PUF using, for instance, on-chip SRAM as the PUF source, because during the configuration initialization process, the SRAMs get zeroed out. In our technology, we're actually using the variability in the power-up state of an SRAM to provide that unique digital number. And as far as implementing it in software, well, software is generally not as secure as hardware. Therefore, we've implemented it as a dedicated, hardened IP block that customers don't have to worry about designing. They just make a call to it, and it provides them the data they need. It's just much easier that way.
So, Tim, what end products do you think this is going to be really important for?
So we get a significant amount of demand from our defense customers simply because of the fact that only the device knows the key and no human beings are involved. And you all know, if you want to keep a secret, don't tell anybody anything. So the PUF helps us do that. So we take that pedigree that we have in working with our defense customers, and we are starting to apply that to the communications market and the industrial market. Specifically, a lot of buzz in the market about the Internet of Things. And the reality of the Internet of Things, it's never really going to take off unless it becomes secure. And a PUF technology can be a founding piece of IP that would allow machines to authenticate each other cryptographically before they are allowed to actually communicate and share data. So we see PUF technology, asymmetric cryptography, and symmetric cryptography being essential ingredients for the Internet of Things.
All right, Tim, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, we spoke earlier, and you mentioned to me that you own, with your wife, 14 horses. Now, how the heck did you get into owning that many horses?
That's a very good question. I married into it. I would say that for some people, there's this mystical connection between horses and primarily women. And they're all part of our family. They all have unique characteristics. They all have unique traits. We kind of live on a small ranch in Texas, so they're kind of in the backyard, and we can watch them, and we play with them all the time. It's what we do on the weekends. It keeps us busy, get out of the high-tech stuff for a while, and kind of get down to earth, and that's what allows us to do that.
Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Tim. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Same here, Amelia. Anytime, okay?
If my interview with Tim was not quite enough information for you, if you're just dying for more information about PUF and how it's implemented in Microsemi's Igloo and Smart Fusion 2 FPGAs, then I highly recommend you check out Kevin Morris's feature article this week entitled Securing Your System with FPGAs. Microsemi introduces FPGA-based hardened PUFs. And, of course, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page that will take you directly there. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle there as well. We also have a very popular YouTube channel, keyword, EE Journal, full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very own popular Chalk Talk webcast series and our video series called On the Scene. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up, see you at DesignCon, that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com, or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of January 16th, 2015, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.